Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show, brought to you by Dr. Pepper and Hooters, your home to watch all the college game day action with an ice-cold Dr. Pepper.
Hour two of the Chuck Oliver Show on a Friday, and we got championship football ahead of us, beginning tonight. And at that point, a wager will change. I had mentioned this when the number first came out. Back beginning of the week, I think I had mentioned this as a there are prop bets. There are, you get all kinds of plays in a casino, at a sports book, if you know the parlance. You have straight plays, you have sides, you have totals, you have parlay, you have all that stuff. You have exotics. I think an exotic is when you get into, do you know what you can do on Super Bowl Sunday? You can get an exotic. More points scored. San Francisco 49ers, Kansas City Chiefs in the Super Bowl combined. Or LeBron James and Russell Westbrook in the Lakers games against Dallas. Like, and you have to think, well, now, wait a minute. How many points will be scored in the Super Bowl, and how many will LeBron and Russell Westbrook combine that earlier that day? Those are exotics. They can also be prop bets, proposition bets. Talked about one of the prop bets earlier in the week. And when you call it a prop bet, it is a little more mainstream. But it's a future. It's something that hadn't really happened yet or sometimes even been determined. I had a prop bet on Monday that I think I like a lot. And it is ahead of conference championship games, ahead of playoff seeds being dealt out. The odds to win the college football national championship game. Now, you can find all kinds of odds, all kinds of different places, but I'm telling you just one online source I've seen. UGA is minus 175 versus the field. And the reason that I said earlier, and I'm examining it, and we're going through the, we're going to have the whole field set, and so you can't really have that play anymore because now you have a real matchup. When you say UGA minus the field, you're betting that UGA wins the national championship versus anybody else. So the first thing is you're assuming they make the playoffs. Second thing is, they have to win both their games. All right, well, against a four seed and a one. So basically, you're betting a two-team parlay, but both teams are Georgia. Now, if it's minus 175 for Georgia, it's plus 150 for no, if you want the field. And the field would be whoever the four seed is, if Georgia's the one, and then whoever Georgia plays in championship game if they advance. The reason it's so easy for me to pass on this, I ain't doing it, is the opposite side's plus 150 for either, let's say, Southern Cal or Michigan to beat Georgia. So, no, I'm not interested. And I think if I wanted to have either of those, see, when you play the one bet on the field, then it can be either the first game or the set. You get both of those opponents. Well, I just bet and get a better number, USC, because USC, for instance, if they're the four, maybe they're minus 14. I don't know. Maybe Michigan's minus seven, whatever the numbers are. So you see how, oh, yeah, you got to kind of declare. And if you think that, yeah, the four versus one, especially with what we think about UGA, that's just not happening. Now, and again, in gambling, sometimes with future plays, you have to make an assumption here. But if the assumption is Georgia will wind up getting past a 14-point underdog, now you realize you're betting like a 7.5-point underdog, and they have to win outright, and all you're doing is getting plus 150 You know, that doesn't really work for me. So the number does not wind up in your favor at plus 175. I mean, excuse me, at plus 150. So the minus 175 is really, it's one of those where you say, yeah, I think I'll walk. If we are looking at the college football coaching carousel, I was mentioning right before we ended hour one that there was a headline from yesterday that it kind of it took one of my buddies by surprise in the industry. Tom Herman was announced as FAU's new head football coach late yesterday afternoon. He replaced Willie Taggart, got fired last month. Taggart was there basically three seasons, won 15 games, not good enough. So what you have at FAU, and I'll tell you this, you can obviously, well, there are players you can recruit. There are players you have to recruit. All right, you got to go get them. But, yeah, sure, there are players local. And a really good stadium of facilities and money. And folks, you can give a scholarship, go live in Boca Raton. I like Boca Raton. If you play football, you can go there. Like Jonnu Smith's in the NFL. He got paid, too. Played for the Titans. Now he's with the, he got a big contract from the Patriots. Jonnu Smith was a tight end at FAU. He's like, yeah, I'm hanging out in Boca. It's pretty cool. And you get a degree, so if you want. So all these reasons, it's a great place to go to school, and you should be able to recruit and thus win, and that just hasn't happened. Outside of Lane, and for a blip before that. But outside of Lane, it really hadn't happened. But he shows you it wasn't just speculation. It absolutely could happen. Well, Tom Herman, been a head coach in college football at two places. He won big at Houston. He didn't win as much at Texas, but there was a lot of internal. He took over for Charlie Strong. Wasn't that him? Yeah. And there was just dysfunction, and I mean at the top with the AD and all kind of just – so it was – he didn't have the best hand, but they also didn't follow through and they didn't win, and so they moved on. I don't think it was a wise decision, but they moved on. If they would have kept Tom Herman, I think they'd be looking around right now going, oh, okay, I think we're pretty happy with this. You wouldn't be anywhere behind where you are with Steve Sarkisian. And you may actually have built some traction with a guy, and now you're looking ahead to joining the SEC and going, okay, we may have some stability. Whereas with Sark, you're like, we lost four games, but trust us, we're better. So the reason I bring up Tom Herman is I'd stated before we went to break that this doesn't work out really for FAU on the field either way. Use the Lane comparison and the Willie comparison. In one, you got the Alabama OC, who would have had other choices. But you also got a guy who was Southern Cal head coach and Tennessee head coach. And because of performance issues, he won the Tennessee, he left the Tennessee game coaching position, go to Southern Cal, and then didn't win, so he got fired. So what do you have? You have a big name former head coach at a giant program who didn't win enough and got fired. What do you have in Willie Taggart? Got a big name coach who at a huge program didn't win enough and got fired. They both go to FAU. Neither of them lasted. They had completely opposite experiences. I told you about Willie. He won 15 games in three seasons. Lane won 26, including two double-digit winning seasons. He had 11-3 and a 10-3. Won the conference both years. Won the bowl games. And they don't get to keep him. They get Willie Taggart. Five wins, five wins, five wins. You're out. So that's how it is for a program at that level. And so when I say it doesn't matter what the contract details are, it'll matter to FAU, because if you have a Jim McElwain scenario at Colorado State, it can be a little bit of a windfall. If you have, for instance, like Western Kentucky had that with Bobby Petrino. Wasn't he just there one season and then Louisville brought him back? When you have a coach at that level who's under contract and the big program comes along, you sometimes can get a one-time payoff. Here's a check. Colorado State was supposed to get a home game. All right, you can have our coach, but you owe us a game out here. You can get all kinds of pay. So for the smaller program, we got a three-year contract with Bobby Petrino. He's here 1 year, and Louisville's going to, all right, well, you got to pay us. So that's for FAU to worry about. And they hope that's how it turns out. Because with Lane, when Lane left, you know what? FAU got a draft pick. When Willie leaves, Willie gets a check. So it works out way better when you win. But here's the thing. Do we realize this? Exact same timeline. FAU coach for 17, 18, 19, Lane Kiffin. He won a lot. And he left. Coach 2021, 22, Willie Taggart. He didn't win very much at all. He left. How you leave, those are the details. But it just shows you how difficult it is to get traction at a program the level of FAU.
It's always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
All week, all year, it's all college football on the Chuck Oliver Show. Not just a few hours before championship Saturday. And I am expecting, regardless of whatever the outcome is tomorrow, any realistic outcome with TCU, even where the Frogs lose, any realistic way they lose, I think they still get in the playoffs, which would be the state of Texas cutting the ribbon on the playoffs. Nine seasons, 36 bids, and finally, one of the schools in the state of Texas gets a bid. That's what I believe is going to happen regardless. I want to welcome on right now today's Truist reporter, college football insider Dave Campbell's Texas Football, state of Texas, as good as it gets, folks. It's Mike Craven. Mike, welcome back. How you doing today?
Good, sir. How you been?
Doing all right. First of all, work through this. I said even a scenario where TCU loses. Talk to me about how you think Texas Christian, how it plays out. And because I think even in the scenario where K-State gets the dub, the resume may still get the Horned Frogs a playoff bid. But you tell me how you think the game goes and just unfold it for us.
Yeah, I mean, I hope you're right. I think you're right as long as it's close. You know, the state of Texas hadn't had a college football playoff contender, you know, yet. And so it'd be nice for the state to get one. We didn't expect TCU to be there this year, but they've been excellent. You know, every time TCU feels like they've been counted out or, you know, it looks like, okay, this week's the week they're going to lose, they tend to figure it out. They played really well last week against Iowa State. The blowout helped them because they were able to get starters out in the second half. And one thing to remember about TCU is they had their open week back in week three. So they've been playing football for a long time. They sound like they're healthy. They sound like they're ready. And when you're playing for stakes this high, you'd imagine those bumps and bruises kind of disappear for at least one more game. And so just from being at the press conference midweek, they all seem pretty confident. They all seem pretty focused. And, you know, to their credit, they haven't let the college football playoff stuff creep into the conversation too much. It's all about winning a Big 12 championship.
Did anybody see this coming? Like, was anybody really stumping for the Frogs back at, you know, media days or end of August? Because I do not recall that.
Oh, no. I mean, they were picked, I believe, seventh in the Big 12 in our magazine. I think I predicted them to go 7-5.
Mike Craven.
Yeah, I know. I know.
He hates us.
I provided some bulletin board material. I'm pretty close with Sonny Dykes. You know, he was at SMU for a while. His dad coached with my grandfather at Texas back when I was a kid. And so, you know, talking to him in the offseason, he was pretty adamant that this team was more talented than the 5-7 record last year, and that he was lucky because most coaches don't get to come into a ready-made situation like the one Gary Patterson left in terms of just roster talent. But I don't think anybody predicted that they would be able to do this in year one. I think 8-4, 9-3 was the ceiling, maybe, you know, compete for a Big 12 championship. But to win every single game takes a little bit of luck, and we got to remember – this is all getting led by a quarterback that was benched by this coaching staff, right? Like, Max Duggan entered the year as the backup. They picked Chandler Morris to be the starter. And, you know, for good luck for them, bad luck for Chandler Morris. He was hurt in the opener, and Max Duggan's kind of taken this and ran with it. So, to answer your question, I don't think anybody believed this could happen, even Sonny Dykes.
All right. I need to know what the personality of the team is because I became a big TCU fan really back after the turnaround when LaDainian Tomlinson was there, and I thought for, like, 2 minutes they may get into the playoff, I mean into the BCS 1 year. And so that was the personality. And then about the mid 2010-ish area, it was Tank Carter. It was all about defense. What is the personality of this team, this program, you think going forward? I mean, it's a first-year coaching staff. I don't really know what to make of it.
Yeah, so I have this theory, and I don't think it's an original thought, but I always feel like coaching changes are like when you break up with a girlfriend or boyfriend, where you date the opposite of the one that you had before. If you're with a partier, you want a homebody. If you want a homebody, you want somebody who's more fun. You know, Gary Patterson to Sonny Dykes is about as 180 as you can get personality-wise. Sonny's a pretty loose, laid-back guy. He's allowed spring practices to be open. As a media person, I can pretty much just pop over there to Fort Worth and just walk in, do whatever I want. You know, with Gary Patterson, you probably would have got arrested if you showed up unannounced on campus. And so it feels like a team that was let out of jail. You know, it feels like it's a team of players who are having fun, who are enjoying themselves, who are playing football, who get to be a bigger part of the community than they used to be, a bigger part of the student body than they used to be. They don't feel as isolated. And, you know, there's a reason we move out of our parents' house, hopefully, at the age of 18, 19, 20. You get sick of that same messaging. I think it happened to Mac Brown at Texas. It's happened to people at A&M over time. And I think it happened at TCU with Gary Patterson. No matter how great you are, eventually you need a new voice in that locker room. And I think Sonny and just his laid-back persona and just the way he lets the players be front and center in the program and not so much about him, I think it's been a nice change for TCU and one those players in that locker room needed.
Do you think that Darryl Dickey looks around thinking, what'd I do? Like, well, how's this my fault?
I mean, it definitely wasn't his fault. You know, I mean, I think, you know, Jimbo had to do something. He had to fire somebody. He's definitely not going to fire himself. And so it felt like a fall guy. I mean, every interaction I've ever had with Darryl Dickey has been good. He was great when he was at North Texas. He's a nice dude. I feel pretty bad that he was just kind of the sacrificial lamb for them. And, I think one of the biggest storylines in the state going in the offseason is whether Jimbo Fisher actually does the thing where he hires an offensive coordinator and gives them autonomy, or he doesn't. And I think I lean towards the doesn't, just from being around Jimbo, knowing Jimbo. I just don't see him hiring somebody that he just hands the keys completely over to. I believe he brings in somebody with some new ideas and some freshness and stuff. But at the end of the day, I think Jimbo's built a lot like Gary Patterson in that he's going to be the guy. He's going to go down the ship. And when you're owed $86 million, it's hard for anybody to tell you what to do. If Dave Campbell's owed me $86 million and came to me and said, hey, we want you to write this way and not that way, I don't think I'd change. I think I'd make them fire me, and I think Jimbo is probably going to put his back up against the wall as well.
I think I've seen one member of the greatest recruiting class ever leave already this week, one of the defensive ends, a five-star kid. I think us all jumped in the portal. What do you think happens? And it's not unusual. It's not an indictment. It happens everywhere. But specifically with the kids that Jimbo brought in, the program brought in this year that brought so much attention to A&M, do you think it would – 6, 10, 12? Do you have any idea how that portal experience is going to go for these kids?
I really have no idea. My best guess is that we will see 6 to 10 guys from that recruiting class in there, not just because they're unhappy with the record, but because they're unhappy with their role. You know, just because you're a five-star guy and you get to campus, that all goes away. It doesn't mean you're great. Doesn't mean you're guaranteed time. Doesn't mean you're guaranteed to start, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, when you recruit a bunch of kids to your school that – you know, aren't necessarily in love with your school and are choosing your school for different reasons, maybe than just campus life and wanting to be an Aggie. When things don't go well, you're going to have an exodus. And I think that's what's going to happen here. I think the good news for Jimbo is I think a lot of the offensive guys, the Evan Stewarts, the Connor Wegmans, the Donovan Greens will stick around because they were able to play and become big time contributors. It'll be interesting to see what that LSU win, you know, does for that locker room and that culture. I think they could make an argument that they're right there. And as they get older, they're going to be better and better. But, yeah, I would not be surprised if we saw 4, 5, 6 major stars from the 2022 recruiting class jump into that portal.
All right. I think even with the weirdness of 2020, last thing, and this is off the radar, but UT San Antonio has a conference championship game. Am I correct? They win this thing. That's 30 dubs in 3 seasons for the Roadrunners. That's not nothing. They deserve a bone throw.
Oh, 100%. I am a UTSA grad. Back before we had football, I was a baseball guy there. To see what Jeff Traylor has done at UTSA is amazing. I continue to pinch myself. And I actually, as a sports gambler, lose a lot of money because in my head, I cannot wrap my head around the fact that UTSA is this good. So, yeah, if they win tonight, that's 2 straight conference championships for a program that's 11 seasons old. He's 18-6 in one possession games. Like, they just win close, good games. Frank Harris, their quarterback, is excellent. A little bit of tidbit about tonight is those two quarterbacks' combined age is 52. People made
that's
a big
awesome.
Deal when Bennett and Hooker played at 49 earlier this year. And by my count, that's as old a quarterback battle as I can find in college football history. So going to be an interesting one tonight. North Texas's quarterback is 29 because he played 6 years for the New York Yankees.
All right, brother. Appreciate it as always, Mike. Thank you so much, man.
Absolutely. Talk to you all next time.
College Football Insider at Dave Campbell's Texas Football. Again, that is today's Truist reporter, Mike Craven. Yeah, it's that's the joke, Dr. Frank Harris. But again, at his age, I think he's 24, maybe? 25? I'll check that. But, yeah, they're both elderly compared to others. I want to tell you as well, before we take a break here, Hooters, what are they doing? Well, right now, somebody who listened to the show in Jackson, Mississippi is in Atlanta. Free pair of tickets, conference championship game, two-night hotel stay. That person walked into a Hooters, used his or her phone, TV screen at Hooters. Hey, I'm entered. Dr. Pepper and Hooters. Well, we gave that away. Now we're giving away a pair of tickets to the semifinal game and a hotel stay as well for downtown Atlanta end of this month. All you have to do is go back into any Hooters in the footprint of the Chuck Oliver Show. It can be the same. It's not a lucky Hooters. Any Hooters will do. TV screen, enter with your phone. Semifinal tickets and hotel stay. You get to Atlanta, boom, you are taken care of at that point. The upside as well, the little bonus, the Easter egg, is if you social media out to any of your accounts, hashtag Hootersville, with you drinking a Dr. Pepper, then Dr. Pepper and Hooters will give you an additional entry into the contest. So we have already awarded the winners, and they are here enjoying their weekend in Atlanta. We will be doing the same thing in a couple of weeks. And making somebody a Christmas and New Year's really good with a pair of tickets to the semifinal game in a hotel room. So make sure that you get to Hooters and you enter. And again, as we said, Championship Saturday actually starts on Championship Friday night. It is UT San Antonio, I think, getting it, as well as then the game you already knew about and we're hopefully going to watch anyway. Southern Cal, with a win, they actually claim the first of the four playoff seeds.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
You better watch out. You better not cry. You better not cry.
Well, LSU's players are here, and Gary and Brad, so I guess we'll play the game anyway. Chuck Oliver Show on a Friday. I appreciate everybody coming here for your college football conversation. 9 states, 56 sticks. Been doing it since the beginning of the 14 season, so appreciate the blessings. I want to welcome in studio a good friend of mine of the program. We have been cross-pollinating each other's shows for a long time. It is my good friend from 104.5 out there in Baton Rouge and points beyond in Louisiana. It's Matt Moscona. How you doing, man? You in studio today?
Thank you for having me. Do I need to turn it on?
Boom.
Hey. Thank you for having me, and I am thrilled to be here. I did not think LSU would be in this game. Love coming to Atlanta for this game. So, yeah, man. And thank you for the invite to come in studio.
Let's talk how we got here. Jaden Daniels, how special does he have to be? Because he's got the skills. I mean, he's got the blue sky, but can he pull it off against that defense tomorrow?
Can he? Sure. Will he? More complicated. The ankle's good. Hurt his ankle last week against Texas A&M. He has practiced this week. They avoided the dreaded high ankle. My guess is they'll tape it up tight, and if they need to give him a little something extra, they will. But You know, Chuck, we've seen him do it this year and throughout his career. His freshman season at Oregon, I'm sorry, at Arizona State, they played a game against Oregon, and he was better than Justin Herbert that day. The Alabama game this year, the Florida game this year, he's got it in there. The problem for Jaden has been trusting his arm consistently and trusting his receivers consistently. But when he does that, it can be special. I think it's going to need to be tomorrow for LSU to have a chance in this game. I don't think LSU's winning a 17-13 type game. They're going to have to score.
Will they be one-dimensional beyond Jaden running the ball?
Do you remember?
They're playing the 33rd franchise. I mean, I say I never get into that. Hey, they could beat the worst team in the NFL. No, they couldn't.
No, they couldn't.
But the 33rd franchise is, everybody knows what you're saying there.
Yes.
And that's what Georgia looks like right now.
So I remember for a lot of years, Chuck, we did this thing when LSU was on that long losing streak to Alabama. And so we'd always go through and say, okay, what do teams do that have success against Alabama? Right? We go and we'd look at what Johnny Manziel did. It was all these mobile quarterbacks that could run and make you miss. With Georgia, there's one team that's beat them in the last 2 years, and it was Bama in this game a year ago. Do you remember how many yards Bryce Young threw for in that game a year ago?
Oh, I remember Jameson Williams taking a little bitty short pass and running a long way with it.
Yeah.
I don't know, like 340?
421. against Georgia. He threw it 44 times. They didn't even try to run it, Chuck. They ran it 26 times.
Oh, no. Then hold your point, because I remember before the game, I was like, it's the most fundamentally not sound approach. I said, but against this defense, here's your only chance. Try to block it up and take shot plays. And if you hit some of them, well, maybe you can win. That's not what I want my quarterback to do. Like, hey, let's try to block Georgia and take some shot plays. But that's your only chance, I think.
That is your chance. That is the point. And LSU's deepest, most talented position group by a mile is their receiver group. A lot of those guys haven't had the season we thought they might, like Kayshon Boutte, but you've got Kayshon and Malik Nabers and Jeray Jenkins and Jack Besh and Brian Thomas and a whole bunch of dudes that are really talented, going to play on Sunday, and you put them out there on the field and say, go hit some big ones. That's their. I'd put it 20%, Chuck, but that's their chance.
Okay, this is a little bit of a DeLorean. Like, let's go back in time, because okay. I used to see guys, and we've talked about this concept. See, numbers don't matter. It's how you get to the numbers that the NFL cares about. And so there would be receivers that would play 3 years at LSU and have like 79 catches and be a second round pick. Yep. I'm like, what? but if you look this year, the numbers don't reflect the skill or the talent necessarily, but you said Kayshon Boutte, and I realized about 3-4 weeks ago, like anytime I would talk about LSU receivers, I would say, I need Boutte to play well. I started subconsciously saying, I need Boutte and Nabers to play. Like, I started, Malik Nabers was the one that subconsciously, like, sort of separated himself. I think it is a tandem. I mean, Boutte's better and older and all that other stuff, but Malik Nabers, like, he's the one. He's the difference guy.
Malik's a dude. For those that don't know, he wears number 8. I'll tell you a quick story from fall camp. They actually let us watch fall camp this year, which was crazy. We got to watch full practices at times, scrimmages. It was crazy. But they would do this drill where the receivers and DBs would go one-on-one, and Malik Nabers, every time he made a catch, he made sure everyone knew he made a catch. And he caught a touchdown on Mekhi Gardner, who's a big physical corner, yeah, as a transfer. Caught a touchdown, corner of the end zone, went up, high pointed the ball, wrestled it away, and stood over his teammate like an alpha lion. He's that dude. And he's got whatever that thing is that when you see it in receivers, you're like, man, I hate that guy, but I love him when he's on my team. Malik's that guy. And people are going to hear much, much more about him next year for sure.
I thought that was going to be Brian Thomas. I really did.
Brian Thomas is quiet, but ability, strongest receiver, yeah, on the team. He's a Sunday guy. He's just not the vocal guy. Malik's the vocal guy.
And here's the other guys, that Jack Besh was the one who had actually done it last year versus those two. He did it, and then he's been on a milk carton all season.
Jack,
injuries
in fall camp, yeah, had stress fracture in his shins, yeah, had a concussion. Really cost him fall camp, and other guys beat him out. This new staff had no loyalties to anybody who had done anything prior. It was, we're evaluating you now moving forward. But what a luxury to have that guy to be able to come off the bench. So there, long way of saying, LSU is very deep at receiver. It's their best position group. it's their really only chance, because LSU ain't lining up and running the ball against Georgia tomorrow.
And that was my last question about offense before we take a break, and then we'll flip it around and talk the other matchups. Physicality up front. I always say, you know, offensive line, you know, it's about want. You got to want it. I'm like, you can want to block Jalen Carter. I mean, then it comes down to more than you. How bad do you want it? Well, I want to block him. When you're 18, it's harder to have that want. Yeah. Talk about the physicality matchup, because there are some just children up there for LSU, and they're going against an 33rd, yeah, you know, NFL defensive front.
But they're dudes, man. Will Campbell and Emory Jones. And maybe the most impressive thing, like, physically, they belong. They've shown they belong. They'll be better next year and even better the following. But the most impressive thing is, this happened to Will Campbell in the Alabama game, and that's the freshman left tackle. There was one play where Will Anderson made him look like a child and annihilated Jaden Daniels. One play. The next play, stonewalled him and LSU threw a touchdown pass. It was the pass to John Emery on the sideline when he, you know, made a miss. Their ability mentally to flush whatever happened and go on to the next play as a freshman is what makes those two guys elite. Now, Georgia's front seven is phenomenal. They're going to make a lot of plays. But I'll look back to the Bama game. Bama sacked Jaden Daniels six times. I think had 11 and a half tackles for loss, something like that. You wouldn't know it if you watched the game. It didn't feel like it. So Georgia's going to get there. So LSU just has to make plays.
We'll take a break, come back, talk about when LSU's on the field and how they hold up against an offense that suddenly they got weapons everywhere. What about beyond Brock Bowers? Well, some other guys have developed. All right, we're going to take a quick break, come back, continue. More of my buddy Matt Moscona. That's next.
Catch the king of college football no matter where you go with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Running across the finish line on a Friday, Chuck Oliver Show. In studio, mi amigo from the Sportsman's Paradise, 104.5 and points throughout the entire state of Louisiana. It's Matt Moscona. All right, I think it's fair assessment that when LSU has the ball, they're studs. They're talented guys. They got Sunday guys. Big advantage, Georgia's defense. I don't know that I say big advantage Georgia's offense, because LSU can make some plays, and a strip sack is a great equalizer, you know. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is Stetson Bennett is a lot better quarterback than folks realize even 2 years into this, and they're averaging about 40 points a game and have a pretty balanced attack. So LSU's got dudes on defense, and they have their hands full. But it's a closer matchup, I believe. Tell me how you see the LSU defense against that bunch from Athens.
I tend to agree. I think the teams that have really hurt, well, the caveat is before the A&M game when they decided they just didn't want to tackle A-chain. But LSU's been really good against the run this year. Even some of the best running teams they faced, Ole Miss, Arkansas, Bama, they really bottled up Jahmyr Gibbs. The problem for LSU is they don't match up well in the secondary if you have elite receivers. That's why Tennessee killed them. They had nobody that could guard Jalen Hyatt. They had nobody that could guard Brew McCoy.
I have a bigger issue drill down on that I want to ask you, because the LSU secondary is the one where I was like, it's imposter syndrome. It looks like an LSU secondary because it's the right uniforms and they run around. It's like, that's the biggest drop-off of a position group in the SEC. But talk about this matchup tomorrow specifically.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I don't know. When you look at Georgia, I don't know that they have the wide receivers to just go beat LSU. But they create so many other matchup issues. You talked about, obviously, Bowers and who's the
Darnell is
the
Darnell Washington.
Washington, the gigantic guy who wears number zero.
Yeah, second leading receiver this year.
But that's the point. Like, when their pass catchers are tight ends and running backs. Oh, look, there's a receiver that's got 30
catches.
And Ladd
McConkey.
McConkey, yeah.
In the slot.
You know, that's not what's hurt LSU. Now, they haven't seen Bowers and Washington and these guys and their ability to be balanced. Chuck, I'll tell you there's one thing about this game that when Georgia has the ball, I look at and say, that could be the thing that maybe is the equalizer. Stetson Bennett is careless with the football. And I don't know if he's bored. I don't know if he's just confident, willing to take chances because he knows he's got a great defense. He will put the ball in harm's way. And I know I think he's only got 6 interceptions on the season, but if you watch them play, and I know you do, he takes unnecessary risks with the football a lot. And if LSU can make him pay for that, that's really their ticket, Chuck. I mean, they're going to have to win the Missouri game this year. Missouri won the turnover battle 2-0 against Georgia. They hit a big chunk play for 65 yards. They bogged down in the red zone 3 times. They kicked 5 field goals, 3 of them inside of 30 yards. You got to finish a drive. And that's LSU's really only chance in this ball game. But defensively, man, I like LSU's defensive front 7. They're really good. But there are plays to be made against LSU secondary, which could be the problem.
And that's just the biggest thing. I mean, there were one of those position groups where you thought there was always going to be a couple of hang them out in man coverage corners and a safety who could always find the football. And they're good enough players here. But again, it's the standard. It's like offensive line at Alabama. They're fine. When's the last time fine was good enough at O-line in Tuscaloosa, you know?
So for those who don't, this LSU secondary is made up entirely of transfers.
It's a bunch of, yeah, absolutely. Just throw them in a pot and gumbo.
Like literally, Jarque Bernard Converse.
There's a McNeese State, there's a Missouri, and Oak State, I think, is there?
Jarque Bernard Converse from Oklahoma State, Mekhi Garner came in from ULL, and Colby Richardson came in from McNeese. That's your top 3 cornerbacks. That's a problem.
You know, Wingo, the D-line one was from Missouri.
Yeah,
Mekhi
Wingo, and he's been great. He's the guy who replaced.
He's a stud, yeah.
He replaced Mason Smith, who got hurt in the first defensive series of the season against Florida State, towards ACL, but. And he's been fantastic. But LSU has a lot of work to do. And, Chuck, the problem is next year, I don't know how it gets much better because you're losing all 3 of the grad transfers that you brought in that were super seniors. So you have to do it all over again with no experience. I mean, losing Elias Ricks to Bama and Dwight McLaughlin to Arkansas was crushing for this team.
Do you think – now I'm talking Eli Ricks, and not too much X's and O's, there's no point to it, but it wasn't a great fit for Eli Ricks. Alabama for a corner, you think if you're going to matriculate as a corner, where do you go? I'm going to Alabama, I'm going to be a first rounder. And then he showed up and he's like, wait a minute, the Saban 3-4 brand of coverage, cover 1, or yeah, I need to figure this out. And it took him a minute. Now he's turning the corner and he looks like Eli Ricks and he's talented and all that. Do you think today, because I don't think so, today's 18, 19, 20-year-old has enough reflection and maturity to look across at Tuscaloosa and go, you know, it's not easy. Just because it's a great program for that position, it doesn't mean it's a great program for me necessarily.
Maybe. I think NIL is going to play a huge deal in all that as well. Specifically with Eli Ricks, I can tell you that was part of the deal. He had 0. 5-star number 1 cornerback in the country, came from California, had 0 NIL deals. And I'm telling you, I know this for a fact, he wanted NIL opportunities. And then he also had 2 shoulder surgeries. So he was a little slow to get going this year at Bama because of the shoulders. But to your question about will 18 or 19 year olds have self-reflection? No.
I wouldn't have.
No.
I wouldn't have. I drove an IROC, got a speeding ticket a week later. Oh, man, I swore I wasn't going to do it again. Wrapping up, Matt Moscone in studio again. He's here doing your show where? Downtown somewhere tonight?
Yeah, so we are today 4 to 7 Eastern at a spot called Big Kahuna downtown.
Oh, yeah.
Man, in 2019, last time we were here, did SC Championship at Hyatt and then Peach Bowl at Marriott, which were great. Just struggled to coordinate with them this year for some reason. Don't know why. But so we took it to a spot in downtown. Hopefully, have a whole herd of LSU people come and watch us.
All right. I think, I don't know, Waze would say 10 East, 65, 85. You can get here in a car in one day if you're an LSU fan. In a day, though, it's a drive, but you can get here. What do you think the LSU crowd is going to look like? Because I think tickets are available to this thing.
Tickets are available. I think it's going to look like it does every year when LSU's here. It's going to be 80-20 Georgia.
Okay.
I mean, I've come to every one of these that LSU's been in, and LSU's always been outnumbered 80-20. If it was Tennessee, if it was Georgia, that's just always the way it looks. I don't know why that's the case, but LSU will sell its allotment. They'll have, 15,000 or so LSU fans here, I would assume.
All right, well, media days, we've talked about this. You're from Louisiana, so you're a food snob, so you wanted it out of the Galleria, out of the mall in Birmingham. You like the media days go as a traveling road show.
Yes.
In Nashville next year, and it's going to go points west. It'll be easy for
Dallas,
you.
Yeah,
we'll stay at your house one year.
Come on.
What about the SEC championship game?
I've always said, so I love Atlanta. I love the fact that, like in college baseball, the goal is Omaha. In the SEC, the goal is Atlanta. Yeah. I love that, and I think the city has done an awesome job putting it on for a long time. But I think my feeling has always been it should rotate Atlanta, New Orleans every year. You should do an East and a West every year, Atlanta, New Orleans. Those are the two best spots, the two best cities set up to host the game. We've talked about New Orleans plenty. It's a big game mecca, big event mecca. So that would be my preference. Atlanta, New Orleans rotate. I don't think it's ever going to happen, but I would like to see that happen.
Expected outcome, LSU. I've said, I don't know, like 35-20 or something tomorrow, 35-17 something. Georgia wins and advances, and they're the one seed, and then they play in Atlanta versus the four seed, whoever that turns out to be. Okay, what about the other side? What happens to LSU? Because, you know, we got to protect the loser of the SEC championship game. Well, not if he's got four losses.
I think LSU, if they lose, will go to the Citrus Bowl and probably play Purdue or Illinois. And that's a bummer, Chuck, because if LSU had won, this has been the hardest pill for LSU fans to swallow. This is the mindset, okay?
Texas A&M killed you.
A week ago, you're going into A&M knowing. Beat A&M. You beat Georgia, Lanyap, you're in the playoff. Even if you lose, worst case scenario is you're going to the Orange Bowl to play Clemson.
Yeah, that's fun.
You're either going to play Kansas State in the Sugar Bowl in your backyard, or you're going to Orange Bowl, which LSU hadn't been since 1982. So
Nebraska that year.
Yep. Either way, LSU fans were fired up. You lose to A&M. If you lose tomorrow to Georgia and you're disinterested in a bowl game, now you're looking at a 5-loss season. And yeah, that don't look as good.
No, that ain't so sweet. Was that Alan Risher?
Old Rish?
Great
dude, by the way.
And way underrated team. I got to say, when you went some Arnsparger, I'm like the only person who has any respect for anything Mike Archer ever did. But they had some big dubs. Whatever. I didn't defend Curly Hallman. I said Mike Archer.
Earthquake game.
So let's talk again, big picture about LSU then, because I think it was yesterday, as we wrap up Matt Moscona, 104.5 and elsewhere, I think yesterday was it 1 year to the day that Brian Kelly, or was it like Wednesday?
It was Wednesday.
Yeah, it was 1 year to the day Brian Kelly took over a program, and despite what it could be, the four losses, the five losses, whatever, you're a division champion, yes. And Jimbo's not, and Nick Saban's not, and Auburn didn't have a coach for a while, so... you kind of outlasted everybody. Just talk about Kelly and his situation here.
I think there are coexisting realities. You can be disappointed with what happened against A&M and how the season might finish. But at some point, you have to take the 10,000-foot view and realize you won 9 games. You won the West. You beat Bama. You beat Auburn and Florida on the road for the first time in the same year in LSU history. There was a lot of good in year one, and that was coming off of a cesspool of a 2-year run in Baton Rouge. So Brian Kelly has foundationally built something special in year one where you can look and say, oh, this is really good. He has stabilized his staff, every process within the organization, and now it's just about going to get the dudes again, just to load up 1-85 to where it looks like it does when LSU's competing for championships.
Last thing for you, any impression about, winning resonates, but any impression how his staff, and I know the staff is the key there, but has resonated with coaches and the players throughout the state of Louisiana? Because, man, that is recruiting heaven.
It was a big question over the summer when a couple of guys from in-state committed elsewhere, out of state. But he very quickly responded, had a monster July, and he has made some serious inroads. He did a very smart thing, Chuck, when he built his staff. He knew exactly what you said. It's why he took this job. Because you can – listen, we just talked about those two offensive linemen. Emory Jones was 5 minutes from LSU's campus. Will Campbell played at Neville, was never going anywhere else. Your quarterback commit, Ricky Collins, is at Woodlawn in Baton Rouge. You got a safety commit at Zachary. You got your running back commit at Liberty Magnet. All Baton Rouge kids. Shelton Sampson's a 5-star receiver who's at Catholic High where Emory Jones was. It's 5 minutes from LSU's campus. You also get on a plane to go see these guys. He knows that. But he built a staff – full of dudes that half of them know him, the other half know Louisiana, and they have really blended together very, very well.
Yeah, when one of the first things is, oh, they don't have Corey Raymond anymore, you wouldn't expect that, you know, the outcome is, but we've strengthened our ties.
Yeah.
That state. So it's just nothing but good. And like I said, you got to play Georgia. All right, well, that's twos and sevens, but you'll make the best of it. And then you move on to the bowl game, et cetera. So A lot of success, a lot of good stuff. And like I said, there are six other teams. I've always said this. We're in the game, man. We're in the game. It's something. So it's a special feed. Appreciate Matt coming in, the other guests. Brody back there on the ones and twos. Thank you for that. Dan, Rolodex to the stars. Appreciate his efforts today. Give me 2 days. I will recharge the batteries, and we'll be back with all kinds of discussion about playoffs, coaching jobs that have been accepted. All of that coming up Monday on the Chuck Oliver Show.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.